So the rules under UPMIFA are procedural. Institutions have broad discretion about the type of investments, the specific investments they can make, but UPMIFA requires them to adopt and follow appropriate policies, maintain good documentation of their diligence and their decision-making. Note also that background state law fiduciary duties apply in this area, particularly the duty of loyalty. And so, in making investment decisions of any kind, including mission and program related investments, be conscious of conflicts of interest, related party transactions, and follow an institution's policies on those subjects. So I keep teasing the distinction between MRIs and PRIs. And
just real quick, from 10,000 feet, these are the types of investments private foundations can make, right?
Yes.
It is limited to MRIs and PRIs.
Yeah. Yes. And we distinguish between an MRI on the one hand and a PRI on the other because a program-related investment is a specifically defined concept in the tax code. And it is specifically defined as an exception to the Section 4944 excise taxes on private foundations for jeopardizing investments. So that was a real mouthful, right? So private foundations, which are distinct from public charities, they're the entities that are funded by a single person, a single family, a single company, as opposed to raising funds from a broad range of sources. They are subject to a long list of stricter regulatory rules than public charities. One of those, in 4944, prohibits them from making jeopardizing investments, investments that jeopardize their tax-exempt purposes. And an exception to the jeopardizing investment rules is for program-related investments. And a program-related investment is one whose primary purpose is to accomplish a charitable purpose, and no significant purpose of which is the production of income or appreciation of property. So it is primarily for charitable purposes and not significantly for an income purpose. That's a long... No, I shouldn't say long. That's a legal analysis. It is something that if your institution has never done before, you will want to do with some assistance of counsel to understand how the test works. And there are procedural steps that we're not going to cover in detail today because we really want to move to investment structures and some of the specific considerations of the way in which mission-related and program-related investments can be made. But I just want to flag that those two are sort of the criteria that make a program-related investment, but there are some additional steps in terms of the documentation and expenditure responsibility and prohibitions on specific expenditures like political and lobbying expenses that are associated with making an investment that you want to qualify as a program-related investment. A mission-related investment...
Just before we move on, that last bullet, the role of expected rate of return,
thank you.
Can you touch a bit on that?
Yeah, of course. So there's, when thinking about what does it mean to say we have a primarily charitable purpose and that no significant part of our purpose is the generation of income, an easy way to do that is let's think about a loan, right? And a significantly below market loan to a project with a charitable impact component to it, let's say low-income housing. That's, I think, an easy way to see that analysis, right? We are charging less than a market investor would charge to extend this credit. We are extending it to an organization who is carrying out work the accomplishment of which furthers our charitable purposes. That's a classic PRI. That is what the Ford Foundation was doing in the 60s that was contemplated when these rules were written. That's kind of the classic program-related investment. As the world has changed and the field has evolved, I think we would be very limited if the only investments that foundations could ever make as program-related investments were, let's take a look at an identical investment. Here's what a market investor would ask for those terms, and we need to get it. Let's keep it a loan to keep it simple. We just have to reduce the percentage interest rate, and that's how we make it a PRI. It's a much broader set, I think, of criteria that should be considered in whether this is different from what a market investor would seek for purposes of determining whether no significant purpose is production of income, and can take into consideration things like risk and duration and liquidity and other aspects of an investment that may affect the willingness of market investors to make it. So I just want to say earning less returns, earning a lower rate of return from a pure arithmetic perspective is one way of, can be one way of satisfying this test, but I think it's not the strict and only one. Do you agree with
yeah, that? No, 100%. What I was going to add is like the non-tax specialist of the panel is that in my experience, the opinions that my tax colleagues used to have to issue at the firm was basically a 5-page discourse on why no one in their right mind would make this investment and try and make money, which is that was a very thorough, which I know you do something similar in your line of work. And I do think PRI is generally just a couple flags on this. It's not to say PRIs aren't a really effective tool and they can be in certain circumstances. Us as an organization have used more MRIs at Builders Vision and Builders Initiative specifically in our foundation because PRIs for us get to be a little bit more complicated, especially if you are making an investment in the best example, which I unfortunately had to be involved in, a for-profit fund manager who's creating a special PRI fund for you and doesn't know what that actually means.